Okay, welcome again. And now we are dealing with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 12. We have just concluded, let's see, with discussing four forces which affect the personality of the Earth. Actually, what we've been doing is talking about all manner of forces which are impinging upon our planet and man, the forces of the zodiacal signs, the forces of the inner group of seven solar systems, and three greater forces which are operative after the third initiation, and are correlated, at least at this time, with the Great Bear, Sirius, and the Pleiades, and then with these other four forces which are operating on the personality of the Earth. Four types of force, and these are the quality, the energy of our solar system, or solar logos, second ray largely, the quality of the logos of our planet, which is also primarily second ray, though working through a third ray personality. If you think about it, the solar logos has a second ray soul and is working through a second ray personality. Our planetary logos has a second ray soul, yes, but is working through a third ray personality. And continuing, we have the quality of the Earth's complementary planet, which is Venus. It's actually the polar opposite, but in this case, DK calls it the complementary planet as well. And then the quality of three planets together, which produce an esoteric triangle of force. And I had given some possibilities here. If we want to exclude the Earth, and just name three other planets, which are fairly local, they would be Mercury, Venus, and Mars. And there's different ways to arrange the meaning of these planets. So now, DK is on page 25. We did take a bit of a detour going to a treatise on white magic and the astrological section there, which is quite wonderful, and spent time discussing the seven solar systems and the zodiacal signs and the elements and the planes and so forth. Okay, now DK goes on page 25. I have several times used the phrase pass through the centers, pass through the centers and forms. There are always subtler energies passing through energies of a more gross nature, which are themselves more refined than still others. And so many energies can occupy the same apparent section of what we perceive as space. This concept of passing through, this concept necessitates the idea of distributing centers to which the incoming energies may go and from which they may pass out again as radiation. DK, later in the book, he gives us kind of a double diamond picture, this idea of passing through. And if I can remember the page number well enough, it would be probably around page 610 in that area. Yeah. So here is one diagram showing the passing through. We begin with transcending forces from the Great Bear, and they pass through transmitting forces and continue to pass through, transforming forces and transfiguring forces, and finally to the planet Earth itself. This double diamond, or the Dorje of Tibetan ceremonialism, is a very powerful figure related to the figure eight, and shows us this process of passing through. The higher ones pass through all the lower ones, the secondary pass through all lower than it, the tertiary through all lower than it. Planetary forces pass through the Earth and through each other. And when we look at diagram four, we see the same type of figure, only with energies filled in related to the first ray. So the idea of transmission is quite graphically portrayed in in these Dorje-like figure eight figures, and we get the idea that subtler energies pass through denser energy fields and continue to reach as low as they possibly can. There are limits, of course. We are told that some influences can descend no lower than a certain plane, etc. So the concept of passing through necessitates the idea of distributing centers. Every chakra is the distributing center. Every sun is a chakra. Every constellation is a chakra. Every group of seven constellations is a chakra. Every galaxy is a chakra, and on, they are all distributing centers. And they receive still higher energies, which pass through them, and which they join in that passage. Let us say that suppose the sixth ray energy passes through Mars. Well, the energy of Mars itself joins that sixth ray energy in the passage and continues with it. So the energies become more and more complex as we descend lower and lower into the more dense fields. Some idea of this might be grasped if I gave you the new proposition, new to you, though old to esotericists, well, the real esotericists, well, who does he mean here? When he talks about a real esotericist, I think he means a master and beyond. So, this proposition of the centers in the human etheric body. A new proposition of the centers in the human etheric body. The four centers above the diaphragm, the heart, throat, ajna, and head centers, that's an interesting word, okay, are basically and primarily receiving centers. This is a very important section, which I have quoted at other times. They are receiving centers, and we want to say at first they are. Because when they receive, at first, they pass what they receive right through towards the lower centers, which are stimulated and growing and much more powerful than the higher centers initially. So the four centers above the diaphragm are primarily receiving centers. The centers below the diaphragm, the base of the spine, the sacral, the solar plexus, the spleen, always includes the spleen, which in a way is a substitute for the sun, because it is the center of vitality. And one wonders whether the planet, non-sacred planet veiled by the sun, would not have a lot to do with the splenic nature, with the spleen, splenic center and the spleen itself. And these centers below the diaphragm are galvanized into activity by the four higher receiving centers, and this is especially at first. This, when accomplished, demonstrates as personality and physical magnetism. So always the personality is the first thing to develop, the elemental vehicles, the lunar lords, are the first things to develop, and that takes the lion's share of human development in terms of years. You know, if it, let's just say that it takes 25 million years to make the fully developed human being. Well, if it is so, then one can think that all but a few thousand of those 25 million years are going to be dealing with the development of the personality. How long does it take to make a soul, you know, from the first degree, or let's just say from the time that the higher power, let us call it, is recognized? Well, a number of thousands of years, but compare that to millions. So let's just say that the radiant higher centers demonstrate at a much later stage of human development than the radiant lower centers. And it takes a long time to make those lower centers radiant as well, just millions and millions of years. Look at, 21 million years ago and something, Earth humanity was individualized. And where is the majority of Earth humanity 21 million years later? Still emotionally polarized, with some use of the mind, but Camomanus is as far as it's gone for most of those people, although some are still, are even now, members of the hierarchy, because we do have free will, and we can press ahead according to our will, and some have done that. But just think, it's taken 21 million years to produce the average emotionally polarized individual in which the higher centers are not radiant at all, although they naturally exist and have some effect. Maybe the throat center is developing to some extent. So we see how this time span is divided in terms of personality and soul development. And when it comes to spirit development within what we still call the human being, that's the shortest period yet. Though when we expand spirit development into the realms of possibility far beyond the human, then that takes a huge amount of time. Okay, so anyway, when the higher receiving centers are stimulating the lower centers, we have personality and physical magnetism, and eventually a time comes when there is a reversal of the way, in the way of passing as a soul around the zodiac. Now, he does use that word as a soul, and that is significant. So let's just say there comes a time, the time comes, when there is a reversal of the way of passing around the zodiac. And as I've tried to explain before, what this really means is that the human being adapts these various energies from various sources in a new way. And that this way is unitive, integrative, rather than separative and selfish and materially focused. That's really what it means in human terms, to be reversing the wheel. We take the same energy and we use it in a new manner in the human form. And this is probably reflected in different types of energy flows which are within the human system. I suspect that the figure 8 is a very important symbol of energy flow within the human energy system, and that it relates very much to the Antakarana, which is mercurial in a strong sense. Mercury being a planet that can be symbolized, I believe, by the numbers 888, and Mercury being related to the number 8. Mercury is Buddha. Buddha appears for 8 minutes a year. At least he did so when the Waisak festival was fully going, whether it is or not. At this time, there may be debate, but the number 8 describes an energy pattern, a flow pattern within the human energy system, and there's probably different variations of that energy pattern which are related to what is called the reversal of the wheel. Because we know that human beings are not simply born in reverse signs one after another, or in progressive signs, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, one after another. So there's got to be something subtler about this idea of reversing the wheel, and let's look to the microcosm for what it means. It means, in a way, a return of the energies which reached the low, and a return of them to the high. Okay, and this is We did review this, so I don't really need to do too much about this. This is symbolized as the revolution of the sun around the zodiac from Aries to Pisces instead of the reverse movement from Aries to Taurus. And this is repeated in the human frame. That's what I've been trying to drive at. This reversal of the wheel is repeated in the human frame with the change from the stimulation of the lower centers to a return of what has been given to them and an absorption, an upward rising, so that there will be a stimulation of the higher centers. This is repeated. This is repeated in the human frame, and the four lower centers eventually return that which has come to them. And we oftentimes talk about some of the major channels of return. What are they? Major channels are the base of the spine center to the head center, the solar plexus to the heart, the sacral center to the throat center. And of course, not in that order. The real order here is the sacral to the throat center, then the solar plexus to the heart, then, long afterwards, the base of the spine center to the head center. And thus, says the Tibetan, they reverse the process normally followed, which in the normal way is to stimulate the centers below the diaphragm, which is the case for the vast majority of human beings. Thus, they reverse the process normally followed, and the centers above the diaphragm become radioactive, dynamic, and magnetic. And therefore, we have the highly developed human being at that point. He says, this is an intricate occult study, which he does unfold somewhat in books like Esoteric Healing and Telepathy in the Etheric Vehicle. This is an intricate occult study and is concerned with the response of the etheric body to the incoming energies. In other words, look to the etheric body for the idea of reversal. Let me put it. Look to the etheric body for the playing out of the concepts of reversal or of clockwise and counterclockwise movement. That's where it will be dramatized. And since there is a kind of etheric body in the astral body as well, and there are chakras there, we can expect analogous energy flows there, and maybe within the lower mental area in relation to the egoic lotus. Maybe we can expect those kinds of energy flows there as well, but beginning in the etheric body first, because the etheric body is the one that is very active at the first initiation, continues to be active, but is influenced by higher vehicles as the initiations proceed. In other words, at the second initiation, there's a lot of stimulation of astral chakras, and at the third initiation, stimulation of mental chakras and of some of the higher petals of the egoic lotus. Okay, an intricate occult study and is concerned with the response of the etheric body to the incoming energies. Finally, it relates, finally, the lowest center at the base of the spine to the highest center, the head center. And there are many ways that this can be done. This is a correspondence of the relation of the earth to the sun. Think this out. This is one of the great hints. And essentially, what is being said here is an analogy that the relationship of the head center to the base of spine center, let me get that straight, head center to the base of the spine center is as the relationship of the sun to the earth. So, what would be our conclusions based upon this statement? And our conclusion, one conclusion would be that indeed the earth is the base of the spine center in relation to the system of our solar logos. Now, whether it fully functions in that manner, whether a triangle of planets is somehow involved in the function of every chakra, I think these are legitimate considerations. These are debatable. I mean, I think when our planetary logos is sacred, and when its monadic ray, which is the first ray, is effective and not occultly non-effective, then I think Earth as a base of the spine center in the planetary logos will at least be fully functioning. Right now, for many of us as human beings, we have, let's say, five centers more or less fully functioning, but the base of the spine center is not. And the full power of the head center is not fully functioning. And thus it may be within the energy system of our solar logos that Earth as a base of the spine center is not fully functioning yet. But as our solar logos becomes a sacred solar logos and takes his third initiation, his third cosmic initiation, which I do not believe he has done yet. Page 384, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. Then, beyond that point, our planetary logos will have to be a sacred planetary logos, because our solar logos will need a base of the spine through which to function increasingly until his fifth initiation, which may in fact be taken in this incarnation, in this solar system, either the fourth as the climax or the fifth. We don't know yet which it will be, because, you know, just as human beings have opportunities to take initiation in a particular incarnation, they may succeed, they may not. What about a solar logos? Well, in this particular solar system, which is an incarnation, he may succeed in taking the fifth initiation, but he may not, and take only the fourth initiation. All of this is trillions of years into the future, at least if the chronology of HPB is to be credited as worthy. So we don't have to worry about that right now. Mostly we have to worry about, can we control our astral body? Can we think straight? That's mostly what we're dealing with. Okay. As we work and study over these matters, let us bear in mind always the fact that we are considering the seven rays and their interrelations in the cosmic process. Well, it's interesting that esoteric astrology is a study that finds its place as volume number 3 in a five-fold treatise on the seven rays. When I was a devoted astrologer, I still am in a way, I would oftentimes argue for the equality of the astrological factors and the ray factors. At least I wouldn't want to see the astrological factors given short shrift or a lower place. But it must be admitted that when DK is speaking of the importance of the teachings that he has given to humanity, the seven rays are listed first as the third most important teaching he gave, and esoteric astrology is listed fourth. As the fourth most important teaching he gave to humanity. Shambhala is first, and the new discipleship is second. And this can be found in the rays and the initiations. I could take a moment and try to find that page for you. And here we are. This is page 251. Of the rays and the initiations, and he says, what does he say here? What are some of the newer truths for which I am responsible as transmitting agent to the world of occult students? Yes, newer truths. I always call it teachings. That's why I have trouble finding it. Let me briefly state them in order of their relative importance. And then he does go on. The teaching on Shambhala is certainly the first. Teaching on the new discipleship is the second. Teaching on the seven rays is the third. And teaching on esoteric, on the new astrology is the fourth. And interestingly enough, well, we can't really say, you know, that the second ray is more important than the third ray or any, nothing like that. They're all equally important, but this is the second ray solar system. This is the solar system in which the second ray, the divine ray, must reach a full expression. So in this solar system, the second ray is the more important and has to take precedence over the third ray. And so when you look at it, the third ray is the great ray of the astrological teaching, and the second ray is the great ray of the teaching on the seven rays. The seven streams of light must wean away the attention of the scholar from all that has been found and sought and used, something like that. It's in the law of repulse on the second ray. So the second ray is associated with the teaching of the seven rays particularly, and the third ray with esoteric astrology. And we have to keep that priority, that hierarchical priority. So that's why he does say, look, we are considering the seven rays above all. And as we know, when we study esoteric astrology, every astrological factor we mention has a ray associated with it. A planet has a ray. Solar logoi have rays. Constellations of the zodiac have rays, and I wouldn't be surprised, he does hint at it, that the great super constellations, which are chakras and the one about whom not may be said, they have rays as well. Rays are foundational. If you look at how we go from the one to the two to the three to the seven to the 12 to the 49 to the 343 and so forth, the 12 definitely follow the seven. And if you put that all together, the first three, then the seven, then the 12, you get the master number 22, which speaks for itself. Okay, we are considering the seven rays and their interrelations in the cosmic process. We are concerned with the seven rays and the 12 signs of the zodiac. Okay, now that's a bit like mixing the testimony of the seven solar logoi or seven solar systems as they work through the 12 signs of the zodiac. We discussed that. The seven rays and the 12 creative hierarchies, and every one of those rays, every one of those hierarchies is ruled by a ray. And this, I think, you have seen. Let me just find the Fellowship of Cosmic... Okay, Fellowship of Cosmic Fire. And right here in the AAB diagrams, diagram number, let's try that one. Okay. You see here, yeah, okay. So if we zoom this up a bit, we will see that every one of these creative hierarchies is connected with a ray. Here goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. And these are the hierarchies that are found on our cosmic physical plane. They all have a ray. Actually, they have a number of rays that can be associated with them, but they all have a ray, and they all have a particular sign of the zodiac, as you will see here, Leo, Virgo, Libra, Scorpio, etc., etc. Yeah, it all works out quite well, because passing through Leo is certainly Ray 1. Passing through Virgo is certainly Ray 2. Passing through Libra, Ray 3 indeed. Passing through Scorpio, Ray 4. But look at this. Passing through Capricorn, Ray 5. And in the normal expression of the constellations that express the fifth ray, Capricorn is not included. But there is definitely a connection with the fifth ray and Capricorn and all the processes of concretion. Concretion, over which the fifth ray rules. Ray 6, yes, Sagittarius, indeed. But Ray 7, according to what the Tibetan has given us, does not pass through Aquarius. They merely coincide for approximately 2,500 years, or as D.K. once said in Cosmic, in a treatise on white magic, 2,200 years, which is closer to the 2,160 years of a normal precessional age. But anyway, the seventh ray and Aquarius are now, for the seventh time in the Aryan age, associated. But the seventh ray, at least from what DK has given us, is not transmitted by or through the constellation Aquarius itself. Anyway, this table of the seven creative hierarchies is something that we can and will study together as we go. So he says, we're interested in the seven rays and the 12 creative hierarchies. An intricate study. Why should certain rays be related to certain hierarchies, and what are the implications of that relationship? And look at humanity. Here is humanity, right there, related to the fourth ray and Scorpio. There's our human creative hierarchy. We are a fourth ray soul kingdom. We are the fourth of the manifested creative hierarchies. Fourth ray is extremely important in our planetary function. And Scorpio, which is the major sign through which the fourth ray comes, is our sign, the sign ruling humanity. So much can be learned from this particular table, and certainly much about humanity by considering the fourth ray. We are learning, you see, he keeps on repeating seven rays this, seven rays that. He's trying to emphasize for us that this is indeed, even though it is an astrology book, a book about the seven rays and how the seven rays relate to esoteric astrology. Now, that is a simplification. We astrologers, we certainly can get lost in complexity. It happens over and over again. And when we start moving towards the number seven rather than the number 12, things do become a little more simple. Though DK is never one to tell us that intricacy is to be avoided. Sometimes he avoids discussing the intricacy that he mentions as present, but only to spare us something we could not understand and would probably confuse. But one day, the intricacy does have to be known. And the seven rays, as they govern the planets, and the planets as they govern the 12 houses of expression. So we have talked about the different rays expressed by the planets, either the personality ray or the soul ray. And it is my impression that when he gives a non-sacred planet, a ray for a non-sacred planet, we are largely talking about a personality ray. When he gives a ray for a sacred planet, we are talking about a soul ray. And as I pointed out to you, page 517 is one of the places where this can be found, and he deals with the different chakras and the planets passing through them, and I think, does he mention the... Yep, he mentions the rays. Pluto, first ray, Venus, fifth ray, Earth, third ray, Sun, second ray, Mars, sixth ray, Uranus, seventh ray, Pluto, first ray, and then for disciples, he includes Neptune, sixth ray, and Uranus, seventh ray as well. So, this is a treatise on the seven rays. And all these factors that he will necessarily discuss in an astrology book, the signs of the zodiac, the hierarchies, and the planets, will be undertaken from a ray perspective. Okay. As we ponder and think, Did you get the sense we have to do that with a book like this? I know it's very mental stuff, but one day all of this mental attention, reasoning, you might say, does become pure reason, or straight knowledge, or intuition, or direct knowing, all of those things related to the Buddhic plane, but we have to earn our way there. Some people think that, okay, I'm just going to get it straight from my astral body, I'm just going to know, I don't have to study. But if we don't study, then the mind does not have the ability to clothe our intuitions in the proper verbal and symbolic form. So the true bridge to the intuition is via the well-trained mind. And then when we reach the intuitive realm, we will not be aghast. We will be able to correlate and interpret that which is revealed to us, which is not always the case, or often not the case, with the mystical approach, the strictly mystical approach to intuition. In other words, let us assume that the mystic does not often have the well-trained mind, and so a revelation comes, but it becomes very hard to interpret, and then it can be easily misinterpreted or distorted, a glamorous interpretation given to the revelation of intuition. This will not happen when we are very exacting in our studies. Okay, as we ponder and think, and as we correlate the various aspects of the teaching, we shall find three propositions emerging which govern the inflow of life to the planet and to the individual man. Three propositions. He's repeating these, I believe. These have been laid down earlier in a treatise on the seven rays, and it might profit us to state them here. Okay. Proposition one. Oh, this is a tough one here. Okay. He didn't exactly state these in an earlier presentation. This has been one over which my astrological friends have debated long and hard. And I don't know that I'll be able to throw any definitive light upon it. But maybe I'll be able to offer some alternative interpretations. Proposition one. Every ray life is an expression of a solar life. Okay, solar systemic, solar logoic life. And every planet is therefore linked with every other planetary life. Well, the planets are the chakras within a solar logos. Well, since the chakras come from the monad, in a human being, they are vortices of force which are essentially emanating from monadic life, probably from the third aspect of the monadic life, you begin to wonder whether the planetary logoi themselves, since they are chakras, of the solar logos, are not an inherent aspect of solar logoic life. In other words, somehow the planetary logoi are parts of the solar logos. They are included within his being, almost as if they are not independent beings at all, but are pervaded by his particular identity. Philosophically, this deals with the pyramidal nature of the universe. But let's just say, obviously, a ray life is a solar life, and a planet is an expression of a solar life, so all the different chakras are part of the same solar being, and so therefore, naturally, as functions within the same solar being, they are linked with each other. And if we could see it, we would see all the lines of connection linking our particular planet to every other planet in the solar system, and each planet to every other planet in the solar system, just the way we have these lines of etheric energy linking every chakra to every other chakra. So he's talking about planets now, that every planet is, therefore, animated by energy pouring into it from the seven solar systems of which ours is one. You see how important it is to to learn what are really the seven solar systems of which ours is one. Are they constellations? C-O-C-N-S-T-S. Yes. Or are they simply solar systems? Are they one or the other? Okay. So we know that the planets are animated, we do suspect, by neighboring solar logoi. We also know that in a deeper way, they can be considered tenuously animated by great constellational chakras in the one about whom not may be said. So, so every planet is animated by energy pouring into it from the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. In other words, maybe Sirius will animate particularly a planet, maybe it's Venus. Okay, the really good possibility, because when I've thought about the rays of Sirius and the rays of Venus, I think they're just about identical. Namely, a second ray major monad, a sixth ray submonad, a fifth ray soul, and a second ray personality, something of that nature. At least that's my speculation. Our sun maybe animates Jupiter particularly. Maybe the planet planet Mars can be considered to be animated by one of the Centauris, Alpha or Beta Centauri. There's a sacral center connection there, and Mars is most definitely a sacral center. Anyway, that would require some real working out at this point, but you get the idea that these seven solar systems have connections with the seven sacred planets and probably with the non-sacred planets as well. Yeah, one of my colleagues, Nicholas Nilen, believes that one of these solar systems is Fomalo. Fomalo. Not Formalo, but Fomalo, and that has a special connection, this solar logos of the star Fomalo, in the mouth of the Piscus Austrinus, the great fish, is connected with Neptune, and that would make a lot of sense as well. We have to work out these cosmic relations, but probably more important that we, at this moment, that we get the microcosmic perspective so we can do something with these astrological energies. Okay, so every planet is linked with every other planetary life, is animated by force from the seven solar systems, and is activated by three streams of force. Every planet, so let's remind ourselves of what we're saying here. Every planet, we are discussing the planets and the energy energy streams, E-N-S-T, energy streams, which animate the planets, actuated by three streams of force, coming from solar systems other than our own. Well, that to me just says solar systems. Okay, one of the other six. Our own solar system and our own planetary life. In other words, our planetary life is influencing the other planets as well. Forces of our own solar system, all the planets and the sun are influencing every planet. And the other solar systems are also influencing the various planets. Okay, so that's the first one, and that's fairly easy to explain. Actuated by three streams of force. Okay, well now what's the next thing? Proposition two. Okay, proposition two. Each one of the ray lives is the recipient and the custodian of energies coming from. Now, what do we mean by the ray lives? What do we really mean by that? Okay, in Shambhala, there are seven spheres before the throne. No. seven spirits before the throne of Sanatkumara. These are, what you call them, intra-planetary, PTY, heavens, I'll just write it. Intraplanetary ray lords. There are also extraplanetary ray lords. In other words, what you might consider is that every planet itself is a ray lord. But I'm talking about ray lords inside our planet. So each one of these ray lives is the recipient and custodians of energy coming from. Now, maybe this is a special case that I've been talking about. Okay, the seven solar systems. Okay, now what is a ray? What can we call a ray life? This is one type of ray life. The seven. Let's just say types of ray lives. We call the one kind of ray life, and I'll try to make this a little clearer. Types of ray lives. One type of ray life is intraplanetary. Then planetary logoi are also ray lives. And solar logoi are also ray lives. And even the constellational chakras, you know, like Great Bear, Little Bear, Little Bear, etc., are ray lives. So each one of these ray lives, each one of the ray lives, and we want to know the level at which DK is speaking of these, each one of the ray lives is the recipient and custodian of energies coming from, okay, coming from the seven solar systems. Well, if we call the seven solar systems simply as seven solar logoi, then we're going to have to talk about some lesser type of recipient. So, is the recipient Oh,